Hi, this is Winfrey, and this is the Monday night session of our conference call, and I'm welcoming everybody that's on BBS Radio, and I'm welcoming everybody on our conference line. And tonight, our conference line is not actually, we are simulcasting, but the conference, we're using two separate phones. Forget the technology, just that you won't be able to hear the people on the conference line this evening. That may change later, but right now, we have been conducting an experiment, and I guess for those of the people that have been paying attention and watching over the past couple of years, or some of them for the last couple of months, it seems like our experiment is working. It seems like there's something going on that's kind of unusual, and that there's an effect of it that people are noticing a shift and a change. Now, the nature of the experiment is, can we create a communion or a blending of energies over a conference line amongst a number of people who have physical bodies and positive intelligences that don't have physical bodies, who we can't see or feel. Now, I guess if I heard somebody make a claim or an experiment like this, I certainly would say, by what authority does someone even begin to think of suggesting that something like that is possible? Well, in a sense, I think throughout the history of our planet, there are many, 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 many people who have suggested that that's possible. And oftentimes, it happens in churches or spiritual groups or meditations. And people notice the effect of having a special energy in a room or in a space. And that special energy, not everyone can notice it, but I can, and I know many people that can. They notice the vibratory level in a room. And they can feel when a room doesn't have a good vibratory level or a low vibratory level, and they can feel when it gets a higher vibratory level. And some people can actually see the vibrations in what might be called seeing auras or seeing light love energy. And I know this is something that I experienced many years ago in a spiritual group that I used to attend. A gentleman that I would consider maybe one of my best spiritual teacher. And I used to attend his seminars, and when I would sit in the room and he would start talking, I would notice somewhere in the middle of his talking that something happened in the room, and that I was suddenly seeing this light energy descend. It's the best way to describe it. Descend around the heads of everybody in the room. And at the end of his talk, people loved each other. People were embracing each other. And no matter how I was when I walked into the room, no matter where my consciousness was, when I sat through his talk, something would shift inside me, and I could feel different. It felt like my pain or my suffering left me, and that I could see this energy. And people were loving each other. And I probably went to his seminars for about 3 years because I had, priorly, I had gone to, I would say gone to many different spiritual teachers, attended many talks, but I had never seen anyone that could so consistently bring that energy in and transform a room. And so I listened to how he explained it. And he was very, very entertaining. And he could talk about human foibles, all the human things. And he spoke off the top of his head, and he was very, very wise. At least it was wisdom that I was receiving. And he talked about the Holy Spirit. And he was not necessarily Christian in orientation, but he certainly was metaphysically Christ-oriented. And it was the first time I ever sat in talks of someone who was metaphysically Christ-oriented. I think prior to that, and everyone that was influencing me was of Eastern influence, India, gurus, stuff like that. And so this guy was the first person that incorporated talking about the Christ and the Christed energy, and it was the first time that I ever could see this light energy. And then occasionally I would go and play music, and I could see that same energy descend on an audience while I was playing music. And I certainly hadn't mastered this energy or knew anything more than it was the most powerful, strongest manifestation of spiritual energy that I had ever experienced. Now, when we say we're doing that here on this line, I'm sure some of you are experiencing it very, very strongly, and some of you are hearing the words and saying, is that really happening? How come I don't feel it? Or anywhere in between. And is that energy here on this line? I'm sure that even though when I sat in that teacher's room and I could feel the energy, I am sure not everybody in the room felt the energy. But everyone in the room that continued to come to his talks would have an affinity for the other people in the room that was unusual. It was not based on anything in the world other than having opened up their hearts in the space with other people present. And those of you that have been coming regularly to these teleconferences we're doing are listening in Monday night on BBS Radio on the Internet. I hope you have taken the time to study my experience carefully, because without understanding the story of the experience, it would be, I would say you're missing half the boat here. And if you're only on half a boat, it might sink. One of the things that everyone needs to scrutinize is, where is this guy coming from? Meaning me, of course. Why does he say what he says? Why are people listening to him? Why do I continue to go on and keep doing this? You know, what am I getting out of it? What's my agenda? And these are very important questions, because within a person's intent is going to be the result. And you folks are here experiencing something on an ongoing basis, and you should study me carefully enough to figure out my intent. And part of that is to read the story behind how this all got started. And, of course, we've told the story many, many times, and I'm not going to tell the story again tonight because it's now on the Internet in more than one place. And the fact of the matter is, it's an incredible story. You know, I read oftentimes people that have experiences, and they've written books, and I really think many of them have legitimacy in their experience. But when I read the stories, I read things like, well, a couple angels sat in my room, and they told me this, that, and the other thing, and they identified this way. And I ask myself, well, how do you know they're angels? Well, I just know. They don't answer that, but, you know, that's probably what they would say. How do you know who's talking to you? And I would ask those questions. I'm a skeptic. I said, I'm sure that there's otherworldly entities. There's no doubt about that. And I'm sure that there's both positive and negative otherworldly entities. How the heck do you know if somebody's talking to you, whether they're positive or negative? Now, you could say you just know, but to me, that's not good enough. There's too many people that have made huge wrong decisions in their life that they paid for with years of a bad relationship or something. And if they said they just know, and then they make a mistake like that, how do you know you're not making a mistake? How do you know they're angels? How do you know it's positive? And these are questions that I ask everyone to ask themselves over and over again about what we're doing, because these are questions that I myself have had to ask over and over again about what we're doing. And, you know, I did study the New Testament. I did study Jesus. And, of course, I didn't read it like a fundamentalist Christian would read it. I read it like, and what I mean by that, I didn't read the New Testament saying, if it's in the Bible, it must be true, so I'm going to believe it. No, I didn't read it that way. I'm far too skeptical. I said, I'm going to read this. This was years ago. I'm going to say, if something's true in it, then I should understand it on the basis of the truth that's in it. And it should ring true, and I should be able to apply it in my life. So there were a couple of things in there that stood out and stuck with me that I said, I think this is true. I think I understand this. And that was when two or more, for example, when two or more are gathered, I am also present. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean, obviously Jesus wasn't present, because Jesus, the physical body of Jesus, was not appearing to people when they gathered in his name, as far as I know. So, Jesus was talking about the Spirit, the Christ consciousness, and maybe interpreting that into our experiences, maybe that was the presence of, the energetic presence of these group souls, who Jesus was representing. And then he said, and I'm paraphrasing this, he said things like, don't trust them because they use my name, because many will use my name and not come in my consciousness. Now that's a paraphrase, so, but approximately correct. So there he's saying that somebody says, I believe in Christ, there's no reason to believe that they're anything special, because that what they may not be connecting with this thing that we're calling the Christ consciousness. And in fact, they may be fooling people. It may be a way to get business associates. It may be a way to feel part of a community. It may be a way to have, well, maybe there's a belief pattern that says, if I believe that, I'll go to heaven. And maybe they're not experiencing the Christ consciousness. Experiencing the Christ consciousness means being able to experience oneness, to be able to experience the connection with other beings from a heart level. And you know what? You can't do this from your mind. You can't use your mind and have yourself experience oneness. You can, your mind can say, I want to experience oneness. I want to experience the law of one. But that's not going to make you have that experience. It's got to happen beyond your willpower and beyond your mind. Although your mind can cause you to read books, listen to channelings, listen to people that you think can help you understand what it takes to experience that, but it can't create the experience out of your willpower. So another thing Jesus said was that these things I do, you can do also, and much more. And what did that mean? I mean, if you take it literally, it means that he was talking to the Father, and he was doing, miracles were happening around him, which he wasn't doing, but he would say it was the Father doing it through him, I suppose. Now, I don't want to speak for him, but I think that's how he would look at it. And he was creating enough loving energy in his space. People felt enough self-realization being around him that that they left their jobs, they went on the road, they became beggars, they went town to town with him, and there was something going on that caused other people to do that, which was, you know, quite a sacrifice. Imagine today if somebody said, oh, okay, leave everything and come on the road with me. You'd certainly whoever was doing that would be a cult leader, and you would be a blind follower and a fool. And yet, we look back, you know, a good portion of the world looks back at Christ and says, that was it. That was very okay. Of course, they weren't there. If they were there, it probably wouldn't have been okay. It probably would have been, who is this guy? Why doesn't he get a job? Go back and make some cabinets. So, another thing he said was, you'll know them by their fruits. So, that one there just seemed very wise to me. It said, if somebody is exhibiting Christed consciousness, you should be able to see something in their fruits and their creations and the people around them that demonstrates something that is special or is positive or whatever that indicates that they're actually doing that. And then another time he said, you'll know them by the not by the way they love me, but by the way they love each other. Now these are my paraphrases of the Bible. I'm not a Bible scholar. And if I was really good, I would have studied the Bible before I did this talk, and I would have read the exact quotes. And so that made lots of sense to me, because if somebody just wants people to love them, then that would be a good way of maybe identifying a cult leader. Like, love me, follow me, do what I say, give me energy. So these are all tests that one can apply to what's happening in this group. And the question is this Christed energy that we're talking about present here? And how can you test it? And if you don't test it, this is where you're not being true to your own levels of scrutiny and discernment, because it has to pass the test. It has to... people have to be loving each other. People have to be, you have to, when we're gathered, we have to feel a presence. And by their fruits, they shall be known. What's happening in this group and is it positive? And these are things that everyone has to look at and decide. Now, in general, nothing is perfect in this realm. So if one expects, because it's something as a manifestation of the Christ energy, the Christ consciousness, the law of one, that doesn't mean it's going to be perfect. It doesn't mean that you have shouldn't have faults, or I shouldn't have faults, or Terry shouldn't have faults, or Daphne shouldn't have faults. And in fact, you know, and then we go back to Jesus again. He said, when they were going to stone Mary, he said, "Let he who is without sin cast the first stone." So what was he saying there? He's saying everybody has a shadow side, and that no one could stand up and be pure enough to say, "I have no shadow, let me throw the stone." And so then Jesus said, as you do it to the smallest of these, you do it to me. Well, that's an interesting one, because there he is really defining himself as the law of one. He is saying, I'm everybody. And of course he wasn't everybody. He's not his body. His body was his body. But that he was accessing the collective consciousness to where his, what we call in our terminology on these lines, his energy field, his matrix was expanded to the collective consciousness of everyone. So whatever we did to one was done to him and to all. So those were things that I could translate into my own understanding at that time. And I could read those things and say, I think I understand this. I think I'm having the experience of these things. And either from my own direct experience or seeing the experience of others as it connected to all of this. And so here I am, you know, many years later, having these voices talking to me. I mean, one could be a skeptic, and one should be a skeptic. And then one has to look at having really four people who are channels all coming up with very similar or exactly the same perspectives in terms of what's happening on our planet. Now, what's happening on our planet is not something that a human can figure out on their own. I mean, to say this is the end of a 75,000-year cycle, to say that there's a splitting of souls, that there's some going to go to a higher vibration and some are going to repeat this density, to say that the Earth is made up of cycle repeaters from other planets, a human can't know that on their own. They can't. It's not anything that's accessible to us. And yet, I started writing the book, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, and there it was, that's what David was saying, and then Daphne started channeling, and I asked all the questions about what were in the book, and got exactly the same answers, and then Terry started channeling, and we continued with the same answers, and, you know, Terry did know what was in the book, so she's not exactly a perfect subject, and then, of course, Matthew has been in our focus, and Matthew has not even studied my work. He's not read my book. He doesn't. I don't believe he's studied the channelings of Daphne or Terry. And yet, oftentimes, I don't know if you guys have caught this, but oftentimes there's a message that comes through Matthew that directly connects with our work. That Matthew, they can't violate Matthew's own consciousness. So they didn't, you know, this is the way the higher forces work. You know, they're not going to, like, go attack somebody's belief system and say, you're believing it all wrong. You have to study enough to lift your belief system to the openness for things, and then they will, you know, talk about it. But very rarely, in fact, I don't know if ever I have seen a positive source come in and tell somebody, here's how it is. This is what's going on. Throw everything you know away. because that would not be honoring your own growth. You have to do your own study and research to determine these things. Now, sometimes people say, I want to talk to channeled sources. Why don't they talk to me? They will. Do your research. Understand what it means to make these kind of connections. I would guess that they're paying really close attention to everyone in this group and everyone that keeps coming back, and that I don't know how many of you have tried to write down your dream messages, but I suggest that you do, and I'll try to explain that. I said it before, I'll explain it again today, because that seems to be a fairly easy and somewhat safe way to get messages from them. Now, when I say somewhat safe, whenever it comes to channeling, I would never tell anyone that it is absolutely safe, because as soon as you open up to get messages from other dimensions, you also open yourself up to the possibility that you're connecting to a negative source. And your discernment has to be really, really sharp to tell the difference. And even I can say that I'm not sure, like 100% of the time, I don't think I'm getting negative sources. I think that occasionally there is the thought form of one of the channels that intermingles with the channeling. And, you know, in talking to Terry and Daphne in particular, when they're channeling, it's like they're making it up. It's like, that's how it feels. It feels like they're making it up, and they're just saying whatever comes into their mind next and flowing with it. And if you're making it up, it's easy to like cross the barrier where you suddenly are making it up. Or if you have a strong predisposition towards something that you want to communicate or share with people, you might have a tendency to insert your own bias within the channeling. And of course, even with David Wilcock, who Ra had said in one of the Wilcock readings that he was one of the best, if not the best, translator of the Ra energy, they said both David and Edgar Cayce at times had negative sources. And of course, this was all explained in my book, and I'm sure most of you have read it, but they described the Cayce earthquake prophecy was from a negative source. And that it was designed to do two things. First of all, to create fear in the future. And second of all, to create a discrediting of the Cayce channelings, because there were a number of predictions regarding pole shifts and earth changes that never came true at the period that Cayce said they would. And if you read the book, there was a whole, probably 4 or 5 pages on that, where I did a search on the Cayce CD-ROM that has all the Cayce readings, and I found out that the intelligence that brought forth that information was not actually Cayce's normal source. It had a different name, and it said it was a humble servant of God, and in fact, it actually described itself as, we are into heaven as Christ was to your planet. But later on down the line, the Cayce study groups, Cayce had a monitoring group that was studying his readings, said, we don't trust that source, and we don't want to get any more readings from them. And they didn't, and that was it. Except that that particular prophecy of Cayce's became what I think was Cayce's most famous prophecy. Even though, I've never read in all the Cayce books that I've read, except for studying the actual Cayce reading CD-ROM, I never read that was not Cayce's normal source. So you can see how tricky this is. And basically, the sources that have been communicating to us both identify themselves. Of course, you know the Elohim's group soul and the Ra group soul. And I have to go through the scrutiny every time that there's a channeling and every time I choose to put something out that, is this really the Elohim group soul, or is there some being on the other side that's masquerading as that, and vice versa? And, or maybe, I mean, I remember originally I said, maybe this, how do I know any of this is real? Maybe there's a conspiracy on the other side to bring false information through. And then I started to think, well, if they were doing that, what would be the intent be? Why do I feel so loving after there's a channeling? Why is there such an amazing energy when I'm in a room talking about this to people? So I had to watch many, many, many of my own cycles, experiences, to come to my own conclusion that it was true. And you know what? I can't rest on my laurels. I have to do that every time, every day, and I know that so much revolves around my own intent, and that if I screw up my intent, I could only expect to get negative sources. So I have to review my intent daily, and those are the people around me. And then if I'm falling behind somewhere, to pull up my socks and revise things. It's because, of course, there's a lot of pitfalls in this. You know, for many years, almost nobody was paying attention to me. A couple people. My book was out, and it was scary to even talk about it. So slowly but surely, there's people paying attention and taking it seriously. Now, of course, that's where one can be tempted to rest on their laurels and screw up, because this is one of those things that I don't think you can let down your vigilance. I've observed how, when the vigilance gets let down, we actually get attacked by negative sources in real ways that we don't usually talk about, but proven to me how real the negative realms are and how careful one has to be in putting this out into the world. Because as I've learned to think about it, we are creating a holographic bridge between those intelligences and those group energies in very high dimensions into our realm. And we are all partaking in that opening of those energies. And when we do that, we're going through realms that have minefields in them and that have negative beings that can suddenly see you and can attach themselves to you and can affect you and impact you and impulse you and scare you. And, you know, those negative beings cannot enter your space when it's got love in it. But if it doesn't, if the love disappears for a moment, they have an opening. And therefore, it's the intent to keep that energy pure, the connection pure, and the loving energy that we all create together, even, that creates a protective fence that the negative has trouble getting through. But when I say trouble, it occasionally still gets through, and it still impacts me or the people around me. And probably, in some way or another, some of you are going to have some kind of experience. It's one of the reasons they've asked recently that when we close our work, that we bring the energy back close to our body and operate within our personal hologram. Because when you're really spaced out, when you've opened your matrix up really to the extent that we do on this phone call, and you just walk around in the world, you become vulnerable to things that you wouldn't have been vulnerable to before. Because now you're acting like a psychic sponge and picking up everything around you. So that's the cosmic level. of the work we're doing. And I had written some notes, and I was going to go back to the personal level, because each of us has the challenge of, even with the beginnings of having these experiences and connecting with these celestial realms in your field and having some kind of validation that it's real, we still have to ground it into the physical, into our physical lives. We are in bodies, and we're not going to get away from that until we're not. And in this body, there are certain things that almost everyone experiences that come from past habit patterns, the way we've been brought up, the society we've lived in, the neighborhood we lived in. We have belief patterns, and that these are things that become obstacles to the flow of energy that radiates from the Hunabku through our bodies and into the earth. And as long as these obstacles are there, we're standing in our own way. And they're not easy to remove. They take a lot of patience on yourself. And probably the first step in this is to observe and correctly label your own obstacles. And the way that you do that, at least this is one way, I say not the only way, but the way that I've discovered for myself, is what I call reverse engineering. And you start watching your life, and you start looking for repetitive patterns. And when you come up with a pattern that keeps happening, particularly where you look like a victim, and there's no outer reason why that pattern is happening, then the chances are you are involved in the creation of that pattern at an unconscious level, and it's based on one of these things that you've internalized from your childhood or from past lifetimes that you're carrying with you, and that is creating over and over again a pattern. Now, I can say one of the patterns that I experienced in my life, probably still experience, is rejection. And initially I said, maybe I'm experiencing this because I'm no good. There's something wrong with me. And then I realized, finally, that the experience had to do with my father and how my father rejected me when I was growing up and made me never feel good enough. And it was like he implanted something in me that I kept projecting on an unconscious level out into the world and kept having people do that to me. And then at a certain point, I learned about my past life with my father. And some of you have heard this story, but I'll tell you real quickly. I was a troubadour. Let me just say, how do I know that I was? And I'll tell you the story. I was talking about this gentleman that I would sit in his lectures and seminars years ago, and I could see the light energy. Well, that guy used to give readings, and he said that he would talk about whatever he could see, whatever was in your highest good to know. And I will say that I had a reading from him, and he told me, went into great detail, the story of a past life that I had lived and how I was duplicating the patterns this life. Now, at the time he gave me that reading, I was going around the country playing music and writing songs, and my idols were Bob Dylan and Woody Guthrie, and I said, I was like living in the middle of Americana, and sleeping on people's couches, and I was having everyday miracles of perfect timing. And then I decided I was good enough to be successful, and I went to Los Angeles, and actually I had met a woman in Philadelphia, and I brought her to L.A., and we moved here together, and I said, well, I'm just going to be successful in music at this point. And I almost was, and I probably, you know, the whole story is pretty amazing why I wasn't and how I got pulled off track. But in any case, he told me this whole story, and in the story, he said that my father, in this life, poisoned me in that life. And I had done something to create humiliation for him, and he wanted to get rid of me. And so now I was in his family again. And of course, he doesn't, on a conscious level, we don't know any of this. All I know is he wanted to get rid of me and didn't like me there, and I was never good enough. Well, the guy told me this story, and keeping in mind that I am the world's biggest skeptic, I walked away thinking, well, that makes sense. I can see the patterns, but how do I know it's really true? How do I know it's really a troubadour in England? And then something flashed into me that 6 years before, I was writing a song. I wrote a song that had exactly the same story that he told me, the images in that story. And I thought the song was from my imagination. And it was so close that I was absolutely convinced that he was right, the song was right. My subconscious had, I wrote the song as a stream of consciousness and remembered that past life. And so, again, I'm bringing up the story because I was talking about this whole thing of being rejected, feeling rejected, and creating rejection, and having no idea that I was doing that. It felt like, why is this happening? Why are things so hard? And one of the ways that once you know a pattern that you're doing, oftentimes patterns have attract to them. Like you have a thought, and then you have another thought, and the thoughts go, for example, judgment. When you judge somebody, oftentimes it's because you want to feel superior to them, and you want to find their faults. So you make a judgment. And then there's self-righteousness. And then there's anger, and then there's contempt. Now, the judgment might have been totally, you can't help the judgment. It just pops up into your mind. It's like, you know, the judgment could be anything. What's a judgment? Sometimes somebody around me judges me and says, oh, you're no good. You're never going to amount to anything. That's a judgment, okay? Or, I don't like the way a person combs their hair, or I think that they, you know, they shouldn't be in the wrong church. They should be in this church. Or they find, judgment is finding fault. And, you know, when you have a judgment, if you learn to observe yourself carefully enough that you see the judgment, and shortly thereafter, within seconds, you say, oh, I'm making a judgment now. I can see myself making a judgment. Now you can change the entire track of the future, because you can now take that judgment, and instead of letting it go through all its, you know, expansions, which turn into self-righteousness, superiorness, contempt, indignation, whatever, you can just say, I have a judgment. I'm going to put my judgment in the light and let it go. If I feel it, I'm not going to act on it. I'm not going to say anything harsh to anyone. I'm not going to yell at anyone. And I'm not going to believe it. Even though there's a part of me that is feeling it, in my mind, I'm going to tell my mind, that's my judgment, and I'm not going to believe it. Now, if you do that, over and over again, eventually, your judgment will stop. It will stop coming up because you will have headed it off the path enough time that you change the pattern. And all of us make judgments, all of us, and it's really good to see where you make your judgments and write them down on a piece of paper and learn to rehearse so that when that judgment comes up, it doesn't trick you and you recognize it and you put it into the light and disperse it before it takes control of your consciousness and binds you energetically to a lower pattern here in this realm. On that note, it is 6:49, and we're supposed to be off of BBS radio at 6:50. So we'll call in the light for everyone that's listening, and for those of you who are listening on BBS radio, and you haven't checked out our website, please do. It's www.higher-vision.org. And we have conference calls every night of the week. On Wednesday, we have live conference calls with Matthew Edwards where you can ask questions. On Sunday, we have grid healings led by Gino with Terry channeling. Terry, are you on the line by any chance? Okay. I didn't give you much room tonight to talk, did I? Well, thank you. Thank you for being here. Terry is has channeled the Elohim, and we have a free book called Questions and Answers with the Elohim, and you just need to request it, and we'll send it to you by email. Just send it to winfree@yahoo.com, winfree@yahoo, and say, please send your free book. And if you go to higher-vision.org, it'll tell you about all the other conference calls we're doing. And it's 6:51, so let me just quickly call in the light and thank you all for being here on BBS. Father, Mother, God, we ask for the presence of the light to surround and protect each person on this line. And any negativity be taken to the higher realms of light and transmuted for the highest good of all concerned. We see ourselves in the flow of energy radiating from the center of our galaxy through our bodies to the center of the Earth.